We're spending the hour with the head of the Human Rights Campaign here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The largest lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer civil rights organization is commemorating Inauguration Day with the first ever event called The Power of Equality. They're celebrating the new Biden administration, but they're also coming together virtually to process these times of violent insurrection, systemic racial injustice, a raging pandemic, and economic insecurity. What do you want to ask the head of the Human Rights Campaign? It's 800-642-1234. Alfonso David is a LGBTQ civil rights attorney, advocate, and president of the Human Rights Campaign. Alfonso, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, at this moment, with the transition of power and a new administration, how do you feel about the state of equality in America?
Well, the election of Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and other pro-equality leaders throughout the country means that equality is a winning issue. It means that LGBTQ people and the LGBTQ movement is more important than ever before, and issues affecting LGBTQ people are resonating beyond LGBTQ people. We know, based on some recent statistics, that more than 70% of Americans support non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ people. So I am heartened by this recent election, by the results of the election, by the hard work of our members and our supporters and our allied organizations in advancing equality for LGBTQ people, for racial minorities, for women, for immigrants. I think we are moving forward. January 6th, unfortunately, was a wake-up call for many who didn't appreciate, I think, what the underbelly of our democracy has been dealing with for decades. And but it shouldn't undermine all of the successes that I think we've achieved over the past few weeks and the past few years to advance equality.
You put forth 85 policy recommendations for the Biden administration in your blueprint for positive change back in November, all aimed at bettering the lives of LGBTQ people. And when you look at this list, this long list, what is at the top? What is key?
The best way to classify these 85 policy recommendations is dignity. For the past 4 years, the LGBTQ community has been demonized and undermined by the Trump administration. They have issued regulation after regulation, executive order after executive order to attack LGBTQ people, whether it be authorizing homeless shelters to discriminate against transgender people or trying to allow health providers to discriminate against LGBTQ people in accessing healthcare, or essentially saying to federal contractors that you can discriminate and fire LGBTQ people for being who they are. That's what we've been experiencing for the past 4 years. And so these policy recommendations are looking to remove and rescind all of those executive orders, all of those regulations that have been attacking the community and actually advance equality forward. So I would say dignity permeates all of these policy recommendations, the idea that LGBTQ people should be respected, just like everyone else, is what's driving these policy recommendations. And I'll just give you two or three examples. One is the Bostock versus Clayton County decision that was issued by the U.S. Supreme Court. For many people who may not know, the Bostock decision said that employers cannot fire or discriminate against LGBTQ people for being who they are. It said that LGBTQ people are protected under federal civil rights laws. The Trump administration failed to enforce that decision. So we're asking the Biden-Harris administration to ensure that there is consistent administrative implementation of Bostock across all agencies enforcing civil rights statutes. We're also looking to revise the restrictions on transgender individuals serving in our U.S. military. The Trump administration effectively banned transgender people from serving their country, and we're looking to remove those restrictions. And then finally, another example is in creating an interagency working group to address anti-transgender violence. More than 44 transgender and gender nonconforming people have been killed in this country in 2020, more than any other year in our recorded history. And we believe that is in large part because of the demonization that we've seen coming out of the Trump administration. Stigma does equal violence, and we need to create an interagency working group to address the anti-transgender violence we're seeing all over this country.
We're going to get to the talking about the violence in just a moment here. I just want to reintroduce you as we talk with Alfonso David, who heads the Human Rights Campaign. And we're looking at this organization's priorities for the new Biden administration. With your questions as well, do you identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, and or transgender? Maybe you are an ally. What questions do you have for the head of the Human Rights Campaign? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Alfonso, the Equality Act is before Congress, this comprehensive LGBTQ non-discrimination bill that would give basic civil rights protections. What does the future hold for this legislation under the Biden administration?
We are extremely optimistic that we can successfully advance the Equality Act through Congress this year. As you mentioned, the Equality Act would provide comprehensive legal protections to LGBTQ people in all facets of life. Some people say, well, why do you need the Equality Act given the Supreme Court's recent decision? Well, the Supreme Court's decision certainly provided that LGBTQ people are protected under federal civil rights statutes. But unfortunately, there are several areas where there are no protections under federal civil rights laws. One would be retail establishments or transportation hubs. So if I were to get on an airplane and travel, say, to another state and get into an Uber or to a Lyft to my hotel, and I'm thrown out of that Uber or that Lyft or, you know, pick your transportation service, unless there is state law prohibiting discrimination against LGBTQ people, there is no protection for me as a gay man, as a Black man, traveling in a transportation hub. The same would be a retail store. If I walked into a Saks Fifth Avenue or a Gap department store trying to buy a new pair of jeans, I could face discrimination as a Black man and face discrimination as a gay man. And there is no federal law that would protect me. So the Equality Act would provide comprehensive protections for LGBTQ people. It passed last year in 2020. Under Speaker Pelosi's leadership in the House of Representatives, and it has stalled in the U.S. Senate. So we are working with our partners, we're working with elected officials to make sure that we have the votes that is necessary to pass this piece of legislation through the Senate. And we're optimistic that we will get those votes. More than 70% of Americans support non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ people. So we believe that the elected officials should listen to their constituents, but also from a moral perspective and a legal perspective, there is no reason why LGBTQ people should not be protected under federal civil rights laws.
Alfonso David is president of the Human Rights Campaign. You can join in. What swift actions do you want from the Biden administration to strengthen LGBTQ rights? What are you watching for? How do you feel about government agencies and workplaces participating in diversity and inclusion training? Have you experienced discrimination at work or in your community based on who you are as a person and your beliefs? What protections are vital to advance for the LGBTQ community? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Alfonso David here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're spending the hour with the Human Rights Campaign and its agenda for the Biden administration. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For decades, dating back to the 80s, the Human Rights Campaign has partnered with legal and civil rights groups to fight discriminatory laws and policies that target the LGBTQ community. And in the lead up to the election, the Human Rights Campaign organized equality voters who back LGBTQ rights, amassing 57 million people. What do you want to know about the path forward for the Equality Act, the landmark legislation in Congress? What are your policy goals that protect the lives of LGBTQ citizens? 800-642-1234 to join in. We have civil rights attorney Alfonso David, president of the Human Rights Campaign, and he's with us for the hour. You know, your campaign put forth people to appoint to justices, judgeships, executive officials, ambassadors, presidential appointments. How do you see the Biden administration addressing diversity?
Well, I had a conversation with then candidate Joe Biden about the importance of diversity. And he made a pledge to me, and he's made this pledge publicly, that he wanted to have the most diverse administration in our nation's history. And I believe he is on track to do just that. Earlier this morning, it was announced that the current Secretary of Health in Pennsylvania, Rachel Levine, would be nominated to serve as Assistant Secretary of Health, making her the first transgender person to be appointed or nominated to serve in that kind of position and subject to Senate confirmation. There are many other examples. Pete Buttigieg is now nominated to serve as the Secretary of Transportation. And if confirmed, he will make history as the first cabinet level a presidential appointee who has been Senate confirmed. The Biden administration understands the importance of diversity. Kamala Harris certainly understands the importance of diversity. And for the past 4 years, we have seen an attack on diversity and inclusion. We've seen LGBTQ people, people of color, marginalized communities attacked and marginalized further by their own government. So we are very, very supportive, of course, and appreciative of the support that the Biden-Harris administration has given to our organization and to other organizations and their commitment to diversity, because it's incredibly important that we have people at the table who have diverse views, who have diverse backgrounds, who have diverse perspectives to represent our diverse community, right? We have a very diverse country, and we need to make sure we have representatives that are actually reflective of our demographics.
Let's bring in Chris now, joining us from Racine. And Chris, I understand you work in mental health.
Yes, I do. I'm an RN, and I have been working in mental health for nigh on over 40 years. And I have seen an enormous change in how we deal with everyone's choices and the respect that is given to all of our patients and those who are looking for help. Now every single person that comes in is asked if their gender identity they were born with is the one they choose, and what who they see as a partner. And so we respect all the different variations, pansexual, everything. I'm very concerned because the population has a higher suicide rate than many other demographics. And I am very concerned that everybody know that if you don't see the next step ahead, or if the stress seems too high or too black to go forward, that there are places where we understand, where you're treated with respect, where you have a moment to reassess, to get your resources, to get your support, and reorganize and step back out.
Chris, thank you so much for bringing this. Chris, seeing just an enormous evolution, enormous change, Alfonso, for everyone's choices and the patients that Chris sees, but still such a worry around mental health. What would you say?
Mental health issues should be front and center for this new administration, and it certainly is for us as well. And the caller is exactly right. When we think about the changes that we've experienced in this country, they're certainly significant, right? You look at where we were a decade ago as it relates to LGBTQ equality and where we are now, we're light years ahead. But at the same time, we still see high rates of violence. We still see high rates of stigmatization for certain members of our community, and specifically members of the transgender and gender nonconforming and non-binary communities. And we have a lot more work to do. We are in the business of cultural change. And it is so much easier to advance culture change when you're working with a federal administration that sees your dignity, that respects you for who you are. It's much more difficult when we're doing this work and the federal government says that homeless shelters can deny you services just simply because of who you are. Or the federal government is looking to discriminate against you in healthcare or in employment. You pick the category. So as we do this work moving forward, I'm hopeful that we will be in the position to elevate the voices and the experiences of members of the trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming communities, because they have been attacked for the past 4 years. And we've seen, and I know we're going to talk about this in a few minutes, but we've seen the higher rates of violence, I believe, because of it. Mental health is something we can't ignore, but in order to have a significant impact, we need administrations, federal and state administrations, to work collaboratively with us.
Alfonso David is an LGBTQ civil rights attorney, president of the Human Rights Campaign, as we discuss the work of this organization to advance the rights of LGBTQ Americans, taking your questions and what you see as the front and center issue. 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Your Human Rights Campaign has been tracking the number of transgender or gender nonconforming people fatally shot or killed by other violent means ever since 2013. And you mentioned there were at least 44 people last year whose lives were taken. What have you seen in these trends?
So in 2020, the majority of the 44 known victims have been Black or brown. The Human Rights Campaign officially recorded more violent deaths of transgender and gender nonconforming people in 2020 than any other year since we've been tracking this violence. And we've been tracking this violence since 2013. Now, previously, the highest known number of deaths of transgender and gender nonconforming people over a 12-month period was in 2017, when we reported 31 people violently killed. And as we look at the trends, we're seeing 78% of the victims have been transgender women of color. 85% of the victims have been transgender or gender nonconforming people of color. More than two-thirds of the recorded fatalities involved a firearm. And more than 76% of the victims were 35 years old or younger.
What does this raw data, what does this profile that you're building tell you?
Well, if you talk to members of the trans community, they will tell you that if they make it past the age of 35, they feel lucky. Wow. And that is such a disturbing and depressing response to life. But that is unfortunately the reality, that they have been targeted. And they have been targeted for a long time and has gotten worse. And these statistics tell us that if you're Black or if you're brown, you're more susceptible to violence than if you're white. And that means we have to think about how we address violence in our communities and come up with meaningful solutions, which is why we have asked the Biden-Harris administration to create an interagency working group to address violence against the trans community, because this solution or these set of solutions will have to be created and applied depending on which communities you live in. We've also issued a pledge for all elected officials to sign on to help us develop meaningful solutions with community partners. And we have a number of elected officials who have signed on to help generate support for that initiative. Ultimately, the goal for me is to make sure that a transgender person walks into a room and they're treated with dignity and respect. When they're walking down the street, they're not fearful that they may not be able to return home alive. and the reality that they live in is completely untenable. It is not something that we would find acceptable for any member of our family. And so I'm asking people to really engage and help us so that we can create and advance meaningful solutions with all of our partners, the folks on the ground, the community organizers, the advocates, the elected officials. We should all be invested in this fight.
Alfonso David is president of the Human Rights Campaign, and you can join in. What equality issues are front and center for you as the Biden administration tackles policy? Are you concerned or hopeful for LGBTQ rights, and why? Be part of this hour, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Alfonso David right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about LGBTQ rights and policies on the horizon with the incoming Biden administration. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Human rights are universal. Every human being is entitled to the same rights, no matter who they are or where they live. Words from the United Nations Human Rights Council there. The Human Rights Campaign has been working to support that vision through its initiatives for decades. How do you respond to homophobic or transphobic attitudes? How do you respond to people who object to LGBTQ people on religious grounds? What are you doing to be an ally in your life? It's 800-642-1234. Attorney Alfonso David is president of the Human Rights Campaign, and he's with us for the hour. Let's bring in Tom now, joining us from Burlington. Hi, Tom. What would you like to add?
A friend of mine from Janesville said to me, children don't care where their parents come from, just as long as the love is there. And I want to, you address the problem of adoption. How can we expand and get every kid two parents, if it's possible, between state laws and federal laws? And what has to be done to do that?
Tom, thank you for the call. Alfonso, where are we at with parents, LGBTQ parents in adoption?
Well, first, I want to say I couldn't agree with you more on that sentiment that there's so many children in this country and around the world in need of loving parents. But unfortunately, we've seen in some cases that states are perpetuating discrimination against LGBTQ people. There is a case that was recently argued before the U.S. Supreme Court, Fulton versus the city of Philadelphia. And in that case, the question is whether a contractor, a religiously affiliated contractor, can discriminate against same-sex couples, LGBTQ people who are seeking to be adoptive parents. The organization contracted with the city of Philadelphia and then made a determination that they would discriminate against same-sex couples and LGBTQ people in violation, not only of the contract, but in violation of the city of Philadelphia's ordinance, which said that you can't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. So this case is now pending before the U.S. Supreme Court. And we're hopeful that the city of Philadelphia is going to prevail, because they have a non-discrimination law that specifically says you can't discriminate. The work we have to do is extensive across the country. I say that in terms of not only the work of cultural change, but also legislation. We've seen negative and anti-LGBTQ legislation popping up in many states around the country. And our work is to work with elected officials, businesses, advocacy organizations to educate people on the importance of making sure that children have loving homes. And we have to break down those silos, but we have a lot of work to do to get there. And there is a stigma that has been advanced over the past few years against LGBTQ people that we're fighting against. But we have to do the work in the states to make sure that LGBTQ people can serve as adoptive parents. Your question about whether or not we could do it on the federal level is a little bit more complicated, because traditionally family law has been the province of the states. The states determine who adopts, who marries, who divorces, the terms and conditions for dissolutions of marriages and relationships. And the federal government has never, with the exception of the Defense of Marriage Act, which was deemed unconstitutional, weighed in on family law issues. Family law issues are generally the provinces of the states. But we will be working in the states to make sure that we protect the rights of LGBTQ people, including within the context of adoption. And we just have to make sure we continue to do that work, the cultural change work, to make sure that people see that LGBTQ parents are just as effective parents as non-LGBTQ parents. And that's the work we still have yet to do.
You talk there about legislation, about stigmas. You know, bathroom bills gained traction in recent years, restricting which public facilities transgender people could use. And this led to boycotts, a national outcry. What is the status of repealing this legislation? Or have you seen states adding restrictions for how transgender people are treated in public facilities?
So we have seen a regression of those bills, specifically focusing on bathrooms over the past few years, because the arguments that have been advanced have been ineffective. You know, opponents of transgender equality and LGBTQ equality have argued that if you allow transgender people to use the restrooms consistent with their gender identity, it will result in the parade of horribles. Well, that has not happened. We have states and municipalities who have had laws on the books for decades. New York City as an example, the state of California as an example, that prohibit discrimination on the basis of gender identity. And we have not seen the sky fall. We have not seen the parade of horribles. So the bathroom bill arguments that we've seen advance in some states have fallen to the wayside. Now what we're seeing, though, is our opponents attacking children. They're attacking transgender children and arguing that medical professionals should be subject to criminal liability for providing services to transgender children, or restricting transgender girls from essentially participating in sports consistent with their gender identity. We're seeing more and more of those bills show up in states all over the country. And we've seen this progression, or regression, if you will, of our anti-equality advocates that are latching on to different arguments. They tried the marriage equality argument and it failed. They argued that if same-sex couples marry, the institution of marriage will disintegrate. That didn't work. They tried the bathroom bill argument. That didn't work. Now they're attacking our kids. And we will be fighting in state halls all over the country to make sure we protect children, we protect kids, and we protect their ability to identify in the way consistent with their being. Their gender identity should be respected. But that's where they're going next. And we're seeing those bills pop up throughout the country, unfortunately.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Alfonso David this hour. He is the head of the Human Rights Campaign. We're discussing the work of this organization at the dawn of the Biden administration, its policy goals, and also legislation he sees around the nation. You can join in with your concerns and what you see where you are in terms of how LGBTQ people are treated in your community, 800-642-1234. Alfonso, we are in the middle of a pandemic here. What is it like for LGBTQ Americans to weather this pandemic?
When we were hit, when we recognized the impact of the of COVID-19 very early last year, the Human Rights Campaign conducted a series of research briefs to highlight the impact of COVID on the LGBTQ community. And the numbers are disturbing. 1 out of 5 LGBTQ people live in poverty. 1 out of 5 LGBTQ people have not seen a doctor because they cannot afford one. 40% of all industries LGBTQ people work in have been disproportionately affected by COVID-19, including retail and restaurants. And those numbers are worse for people of color and for members of the transgender community. As an example, 38% of LGBTQ people of color have had their work hours reduced, compared to 29% of white LGBTQ people, or 24% of the general population. And another example is 70% of transgender people report experiencing discrimination in accessing healthcare. 70. So when you talk about 1 out of 5 LGBTQ people living in poverty, and then you talk about 70% of transgender people facing discrimination in accessing healthcare, the picture is very bleak. And we know the numbers are increasing. More and more people are contracting COVID. And if you're Black, and if you're Brown, and if you're LGBTQ, unfortunately, you face barrier after barrier after barrier in discrimination, in accessing healthcare, in securing employment, and the numbers are getting worse. And we are hopeful that with the new administration coming in, we will have an entirely new plan to ensure that the LGBTQ community is protected and has access to healthcare, employment, resources that all other communities obviously should have as well.
What do you see on the health insurance, health coverage front from the administration? How will this help the LGBTQ community?
Well, if we can ensure that there is no discrimination in healthcare, that'll be a huge start. So the Affordable Care Act was passed a number of years ago during President Obama's administration. And that statute effectively said you cannot discriminate in the servicing of healthcare. The Trump administration made a decision to issue a regulation to allow healthcare providers, medical practitioners to discriminate against LGBTQ people in accessing healthcare. The Human Rights Campaign sued the Trump administration in response to their regulation, and we won a preliminary injunction in federal court, barring those regulations from going into effect. So we need to first make sure that there can be no discrimination in healthcare, that you can't be denied services because of your Black transgender woman. And that's what we're fighting for at its base level, to ensure that there is an enforcement of the statute. Second, we need to, of course, make sure that healthcare is easily accessible. The 1 out of 5 LGBTQ people who live in poverty obviously are going to face challenges in accessing healthcare. And we need to work to make sure that we do additional modifications to law to provide protections to LGBTQ people in healthcare.
As we talk healthcare here, the HIV epidemic disproportionately affects gay and bisexual men as well as transgender women. And Biden has set a goal of ending the HIV epidemic by 2025. How do you feel about this timeline?
I am appreciative of the commitment to end it as a starting point. I say that because I worked in the administration of Governor Andrew Cuomo for 12 years. Mm-hmm. And during my tenure in the administration, we made a pledge to end HIV as an epidemic. And he was the first governor in the country to do that. And as a result, other governors have taken leadership roles in trying to end HIV/AIDS as an epidemic in this country. I am understand the importance of leadership, and the fact that the Biden administration is saying this is important to us is so important because we've seen the past 4 years a regression. We've seen the AIDS task force dissembled. We've seen resources that we should have had for HIV/AIDS dwindle. We've seen the statistics get worse for people of color. 1 out of 2 Black men who are gay or bisexual will get HIV in their lifetime. Mm. 1 out of 2. 1 out of 4 Latinx men who are gay or bisexual will get HIV in their lifetime. So there's some who believe that HIV is dead. You can take a pill and protect yourself. Well, that is not true in certain communities, and specifically communities of color. So when the federal administration says we are going to end HIV as an epidemic, I applaud that. The timeline, of course, is something that we can discuss. But to say that they're going to do this in the next 4 years, I think is admirable. And I support their efforts here, because we have communities that are being ravaged by the virus. And unfortunately, the federal government looked the other way for the past 4 years.
Alfonso David, president of the HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, working toward LGBTQ equality, fighting discriminatory laws. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation with Alfonso David, president of the Human Rights Campaign. It's the largest civil rights organization in the country working toward LGBTQ equality. President-elect Joe Biden's ambitious LGBTQ agenda could make him our nation's most pro-equality president in history. And we're getting the perspective of the HRC on its goals for the first 100 days and going forward. Let's bring in Kyle now in Delafield. Hi, Kyle. What would you like to add?
I've just got two quick questions. I have a question regarding what the earliest age that your guest believes children should be able to decide on going with a gender reassignment surgery, and also if that creates a dangerous precedent that young children are able to make sexual decisions that will impact the rest of their life at such an early age. Those are my two questions.
Kyle, thanks for that. Kyle, wanting you to address the process of gender transition and the age.
The determination of whether, how, and when a person should undergo any type of procedure, medical procedure, should be determined by physicians, not by policy advocates, not by elected officials. We have decided in this country and other parts of the world that medical professionals have unique training. They take an oath to protect the health and safety of their clients and their patients. They should be responsible for making that determination. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical professional. I certainly studied medicine very early in my life before I shifted to law. But I think as a society, we need to respect the determinations of physicians. They make those decisions, and we shouldn't be deciding when it's appropriate for one person as opposed to another. And in some cases, it may be appropriate for person A at a certain age, and for person B, it may not be appropriate. And that's, I think, what we want to do in this country. And I think we do that now in many cases. If you and I, as an example, experience trauma, the recommendations, the diagnoses, the prognosis associated with our conditions may be different depending on our experiences. And we leave it up to physicians to make those determinations. We should do the same here.
In schools, what have you seen in terms of counseling and support services for transgender children?
It varies. Mm-hmm. The support for transgender children varies depending on where you live. Mm-hmm. The Human Rights Campaign has a number of programs. One is Welcoming Schools, which provides resources and support to school districts all over the country, training to ensure that teachers and supervisors understand the needs of LGBTQ students and can provide them with the support and resources. We also have another program called All Children, All Families. And that program essentially works with social service districts all over the country to make sure that they are culturally competent in providing services and resources to LGBTQ young people. More than 40% of homeless youth are LGBTQ. So they're thrown out of their homes because they're LGBTQ. They find themselves on the street. They then find themselves in the foster care system with school social service districts that may not be culturally competent in managing their needs and may place them in another home that further victimizes them. So we're working with social service districts to make sure they're culturally competent, and also working with school districts. But the lay of the land is quite varied. And the services and resources are inconsistent across the country. And that's something that we are working to change.
We heard from a caller in Milwaukee, called in, couldn't stay with us on the air. And this caller's roommate is transgender and was attacked last year. It wasn't related to gender identity, but the caller is upset that there was never any follow-up from police and wants to know, how common is that for law enforcement not to take these attacks seriously?
There is a level of inconsistency that we've seen across law enforcement agencies in addressing violence against transgender people. We're seeing, and we've seen, misgendering for transgender people who unfortunately have been killed in this country, where they are misnamed, they're misgendered. We've also seen cases where claims have been filed in certain law enforcement agencies, and those claims have not been followed up. They're not taken seriously. And that's why we are working with the Biden-Harris administration again to make sure we have an interagency working group to address the violence against the trans community. And in addition to that, making sure that we update data collection. Right now, data collection is quite voluntary. And the federal government, with respect to hate crimes, is compiling that data based on the voluntary participation of states. And the numbers that we're getting do not reflect the reality. So we have a lot of work to do to make sure that we have accurate data collection, that we have appropriate training of law enforcement agencies all across the country to make sure that they understand what the appropriate pronoun usage is for people, what gender identity is, what misclassification is, to make sure that we have appropriate follow-up as well. We don't have that in many parts of the country. And that is something that we need from both the federal government and from our state agencies.
We only have a minute left here, but I want to hear your thoughts. We learned on MLK Day that the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund is putting up a $40 million scholarship program to support a new generation of civil rights lawyers in the South, putting dozens through law school. How do you feel about this?
Hallelujah. It is. I am Sherilyn Eiffel, who's the head of LDEF, is a close friend, and I love the work that they do. I've been engaged in civil rights work and advocacy for more than 20 years, and we have a lot of work to do. We have not realized the full promise of our democracy. We have not realized the full promise of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, as we unfortunately just saw on January 6th. And marginalized groups, LGBTQ people, Black people, brown people in this country continue to be marginalized. We have to do more. And making sure that we have more civil rights lawyers is an incredible resource for us in doing this work. So I applaud the work of LDEF and our other partners that are doing this across the country.
Alfonso, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kate, for having me. And also hi to Senator Tammy Baldwin, if she's listening. She's been such a great champion as well.
Alfonso David is an LGBTQ civil rights attorney and advocate, president of the Human Rights Campaign. We have a link to the HRC's Blueprint for Positive Change 2020. It's at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.